Charles Oski is the superintendent of schools at Johnson County District Number 1 in Buffalo, Wyoming. Good morning, Mr. Oski.
Good morning, and I'm excited. It's another week under our belt. Here we are again.
That's right.
It's a little cooler outside. We've had some rain, and thanks for the opportunity.
We're getting straight into the sports seasons and fall activities and all kinds of things going on at schools. What's happening this week?
Yeah, so really exciting. We finished up with state golf here last week, and it's super, super good stuff. Our kids performed well. That's another great example of everybody came together to put on a state event that wasn't scheduled to be ours, that just happened actually last 3 to 4 months.
How did that happen?
Just due to the course that was expected to be on the drought, and they weren't able to hold it. So, you know, kudos to Ryan and his staff and the community and, you know, Mr. Martin and the golf team and everybody that kind of pulled together to host state golf kind of at the last minute. So, again, that volleyball, football is up and going. Got great things happening in KC. So it is fall season, and activities are rolling on a daily basis. So in addition to that, the reason we're here, great things are happening in the buildings. We'll get into what I'd like to talk a little bit about today is our state report cards are out, our school report cards, and what we're doing with that piece. But lots of great things happening in Johnson County. Gearing up for the Right Road. That's a big event. Also with elections, we have on the 28th, official are people running for the board. The WSBA is sponsoring kind of a little work session here at the admin building, so I'm excited about that. But just lots of positive things. So
awesome. So let's talk a little bit about testing. The newspaper had an article this week, and people are talking about the school report cards and testing numbers and
Let's talk about that. So this is the year of a benchmark. This is Charles's start of his second year. This is the benchmark for myself as a superintendent. It's kind of coming off COVID. We're to that point right now that most kids are back in school. So this really is the year that, in my opinion, and most of the superintendent's opinion, this is a year where we kind of see where we landed after COVID. Yeah. So we're starting to take a look at some of those results and the state report cards. And statewide, you know, there's definitely bubbles, especially science, because it was a new set of standards we're teaching to. So there's some kind of bumps in the roads with that. We do have two schools that will have to submit a plan of improvement, which is Cloud Peak Elementary and the high school, but the teachers have been super good with that piece, and that will need to be submitted by November 1st to the state, so we're already working with Dr. Miller and the curriculum director to kind of develop those plans.
So what is it that causes a school to have to submit a plan of improvement?
So a lot of that's based on your student growth, kind of where your scores are, the percentage of kids that are proficient or below proficient. It just looks at those different cohorts, and we definitely want to show growth. There's an equity piece. It'd be good, you know, eventually down the road I'll get you and the building principals, we'll get them together or even sit down and have an interview with Mr. Miller to kind of overlook some of those things. And you have to remember that the report card is based on a one-time snapshot of where we're at. This doesn't really tell us what we're doing, because we're doing a lot more than that.
So Cloud Peak Elementary and Buffalo High School will have to submit a plan of improvement. So exactly, I mean, for their listing audience, where do those schools fall short? What is that exactly mean?
So you got it in the category. So you look at where your math and your ELA and where your science is. So it's kind of looking at our students growing, they're subgrouped, there's an equity piece that falls into some of those. Cloud Peak is really pretty simple. I think they were 1 point away from being accredited. So that's, you know, one or two scores. High school is taking a look. Again, it's that transition from the eighth grade year to the freshman year. There's some different things with standards. However, we're going to look at, you know, their high-performing middle school. But you got to understand there is a transition from middle school to high school. So go from high-performing, and then where we're at, it has to do with schedules. So taking a look, you know, what standards are actually being assessed. I've talked a little bit about blueprints in the past. Are the student schedules aligning to what we're being assessed on, those blueprints? So if we're being assessed on Algebra 1, is everybody taking Algebra 1? If it's geometry, their sophomore year, but if geometry is at a different time, have they actually introduced the standards yet? Have they been taught the standards? And then what complicates it for high school is in high school, we got to start getting them ready for college and career readiness. So even though they say there's a correlation, your ACT, we start prepping for that. So in that, those are those courses or those advanced tracks that they're on that are a little bit different, because that's a completely different assessment. The high school did score above on the average, above the state average with ACT scores. So it's really finding that balance at the high school that's more of a struggle than the other schools, because you have two different assessments, which means kids have to be at two different levels. So kind of balancing that data out now. And Dr. Miller, I'll give credit to the teachers in all the buildings district-wide. He is super good at providing that individual data and where students were and where they're at and what we're missing. And they have been asking for that data. As a matter of fact, the last week and a half, he has been just burning the midnight oil to make sure he gets that information to him. So he's also went to buildings and met with individual grade levels and talking about this is what the data shows, this is what we can improve on. And that all ties right back to what we've already implemented before the report cards came out, was that's what PLCs are. Taking a look at where that at, that professional learning community. It goes right back to what we're doing with the Danielson training, which is talking about quality of teaching, not teacher evaluation, but what are some components of quality teaching. So it kind of all aligns. I mean, there's a lot of parallels with that. But YTOP is definitely a one-time snapshot. We talk about Laurie's school in the early elementary, getting prepared for Craig's school in Cloud Peak. So there's a lot of moving parts. However, it is going to be an expectation for accreditation in next fall of 23 that it's not a bad thing for us to do. It's actually a good thing. Effective district too. Every school is going to have a school improvement plan, because no matter whether you are required to or not, it should be something we should be doing at every building and looking at, hey, what are some areas we need to grow in and establishing some goals.
So how do you find time with all the things that are going on in the schools and each principal is incredibly busy? How do you find time as a staff to really dig into this and create, you know, plans for improvement?
Well, first of all, we have to come together and do it together as a team. And so that's what Dr. Miller's doing also, is he's that support piece of bringing the data to the table so the teachers don't have to look for the data. It is. I mean, you have a great point. There's never enough time in the day, because we still have to teach. We still have to meet their daily things. So we're going to have to intentionally carve out that time. But from the district level, we need to provide the support for them so that we can guide them, answer their questions, and put some things in place. And I really want to emphasize this. They're already doing it, because what I've seen in the last 2 weeks is, and hearing from Dr. Miller, is they're asking for this stuff. So they're wanting this. They're wanting to improve. So now it's a matter of just putting it on paper. So it isn't even something that is an expectation that we're going to initiate this. They've already done this on their own. So that excites me more than anything, that we are in a school district where teachers are going, holy cow, where is this information? What does this information really show us? So it's already in motion, and they're wanting to do it. We just have to kind of organize it and make sure it happens.
And a little more generically about testing in general. You know, there's been much talk over the years about too much testing and teaching for the test and not just educating. And this is a one-time snapshot, but there's a lot more testing that goes on.
Oh, absolutely. Especially in the elementaries, as you move up through, is, big focus on K-3 literacy. There's formative assessments, there's assessments on a weekly basis that you're monitoring kids and make sure they're doing what they're doing. We heard that comment that kids can't read, and I disagree with that. I mean, kids read at every different level. Are they grade level? Kids read, they're just at different levels. So it's the same way as we kind of move through this assessment piece with school report cards. However, we should be seeing kids grow. Where do we start? Where do we end every year? And where do we go from the next year? And how does that translate? And that's why curriculum is really important. So there's an alignment. What's being taught at one grade level really builds the foundation for the next grade level. So aligning some of those things and providing that support, working smarter, not harder, is our ultimate goal. What is important? What do we control? And that comes down to really just having and making intentional time to do some of that stuff. That's why PLCs are important, building into the schedule, that time for teachers to do that. So it's complicated. However, the snapshot that we're looking at right now has some valuable data. And are those kids growing? Are they growing according to their skill set the last time they tested? So are we moving kids? And I guess that's what the focus needs to come back to. Are we moving kids from where they are and moving them in the right direction? So I'm excited. 12 months from now, let's have that conversation, and hopefully I can say we moved. We moved some kids in the right direction.
So what can parents and the community add into the puzzle piece of growing students from, you know, a red zone to a yellow zone to a green zone, if you equate it with colors?
So kids have to be in class. And we have to understand there has to be work that's involved. We're transitioning from that virtual world back to the brick and mortar, which I firmly believe is the best place for kids. So we did a lot of virtual stuff, and we just kind of basically taught the basics and tried to get some of the essentials done, and this is nationwide. However, now we relied on some companies to provide virtual educational opportunities for kids that really there wasn't a strong alignment to the blueprints or to our standards. So you're trying to do that catch-up mode. So there's a lot of catching up at all levels. And this is the year where we say, hey, here's the gap. Here's the good things. Here's the things we need to improve on. This is what they missed. So this is the things we need to go back and readdress. But that whole idea is this is important, and understanding that, yeah, the white top doesn't necessarily mean that a kid's not going to go to college or not going to be successful. However, it does impact the schools. So community members, parents, and students understanding that this is critical, this is a representation of the great things that we are doing, but it's based on basically a one-day snapshot of math, a one-day snapshot of science, of ELA. Doesn't mean the kids don't know it, but we also got to take into consideration, we all have good days and bad days, all right? Some kids are testers, some kids are not. But we are going to do a better job of emphasizing the importance of it. I need parents and students to understand this is critical, this represents our schools, what our teachers do, but kids need to be in school every day. Because we only have so much time to get from point A to point B before that assessment piece happens.
So, you know, nationwide, most of the nation was not in school for, you know, 6 months to a year, whereas we only missed 2 months here in Johnson County, and I think Wyoming in general was in school more.
Yep.
Do you have a comparison of nationwide where the gaps are, you know, or is that too soon to know that? And where we fall.
And the fair statement with that, there's only really one assessment we compare to, and that's NAEP, because our state assessment is different than every other state assessment, how they do that accountability piece. So it's really probably it's not solid data yet, but it will start coming out, and it's going to be through your NAEP scores that we can really compare what we do to other states. There are states, you know, just as an example, when we first adopted MAP, which is NWEA, a long time ago, some districts still do it. The gentleman that came in and did the training said, for us, it was 60 or 70th percentile in order to be projected to be proficient on your state assessment. he said there were states that you only had to be in the 25th percentile to be proficient on their state assessment. So that tells you the variance between different states, different assessments. So ACT would be a common formality, but however, you have to remember, some states don't require every student, every junior, to take the ACT. So if you take your bottom 20% of your scores out, that's a big difference. So we've got to make sure when we're comparing data, we're comparing apples to apples. Just because it's an ACT test, yeah, there's some states that, you know, have a 23 or 24, but they only require their top 50% of students to take the ACT. So that's not a fair analogy of what we're doing. And especially in a state, in 93,000 students, that's an average-sized district in one town in other states. So our entire state is theoretically a pretty rural state with the number of students we test.
And so you mentioned NAEP. That's obviously a national assessment. But yes. So what is that and when does that happen?
So it happens once a year, similar to YTOP. It's just an assessment that's given at certain grade levels in the elementary and at the middle school. So those are NAEP scores that are out there. And what we probably should do is get you guys to those schools and just have a conversation about their individual NAEP scores and how they address it. But it's just we sometimes refer to it as we are the lucky school that gets to have the NAEP test come to our building. And it's based on a state average. They usually don't give you building level scores, which is kind of frustrating because if we're going to take an assessment, we don't have the actual individual data to know what it looks like. It's just an overall state piece. There is really, in my mind, no solid data to compare us from one state to another because we all have a different format of how we assess our kids.
Well,
I don't mean to muddy the water, but I'm just being honest. We've got to take care of ourselves. I feel our state assessment is one of the most rigorous ones around. And that's not taking away from what other states are doing. Other states are doing great things, and they want their kids to perform well. That's going to lead me into, I'm excited about what the governor's doing with the Right Ride, what the state is trying to do with the profile of a graduate. So we really need to take a look at what we expect out of our kids because that'll trickle all the way down through elementary with where our standards and where our curriculum is.
So I think we've hit testing, and we'll continue to talk about testing on and on and on. And there's lots of testing, you know, as we know, it seems like there's testing. And I think you've cleared up some of my questions. What else is happening around the district and that you want to hit today?
You know, again, just encouraging parents to be involved. The elementary's had their reintroduction to PTOs, getting parents involved in parent meetings. I know Lori's school, she and it started it out at 5:30 and parents were there, and I think they went to almost 8 o'clock. So getting parents involved, I know the high school is trying to get parents involved and just keeping them informed. So the more parents can get involved with those opportunities for meetings with the building administrators and communicating and kind of understanding what we're doing in schools is really going to help answer a lot of questions that even Charles can't answer.
Well, it sounds like there's so much going on, and we look forward to visiting again next week about new things in the schools.
Me too, and I appreciate this. I do apologize for my clearing my throat the whole time, but hopefully we'll get into a little more fall weather and get rid of the allergies. So
I hope so. Well, this is Marcy Schuler, and signing off for now with 307 Net Radio and Charles Oski, Superintendent of Schools at Johnson County School District Number 1.
Thank you. Have a great week.